Welcome to the Painting of the Week podcast, where we look at some of the most significant paintings throughout history. Introducing your hosts, Phil Grabsky and Laura Bentham.
Welcome to this week's Painting of the Week. And we have a special episode today because Laura and I actually are doing this from separate houses for reasons.
Again.
but we're very lucky because actually we have a third guest or a third person with us today, longtime friend and colleague, Ali Ray. Ali Ray has directed two films for exhibition on screen, Mary Cassatt being one and Frida Kahlo being the other. And today's painting that we're going to talk about is The Two Fridas by Frida Kahlo. And for those of you who are listening to this as we release it, this is somebody in the office thought it'd be quite fun to release this on the 22nd of the 2nd, 22. So 2-2-2-2-2, and to then talk about the two Fridas. So you basically got about a day to be on time. But anyway, it's quite fun. And I'm sure Frida would have appreciated that. So, just as a reminder, if you go to 7th-art.com, you can see Frida's painting. And you can look at the painting as we talk about it. Now, just by way of a further introduction, I have to admit that before we made the Frida Kahlo film, I was a little bit unsure about the work of Frida Kahlo. And I think that goes back to something we've talked about in the podcasts before, which is sometimes paintings are hard work. And unless you know the theology or the biography or, you know, it could be various other things, sometimes the door isn't open, the clues aren't quite apparent enough, the pleasure isn't quite visceral enough, and so you move on. What I found in working with Ali a little bit on the Frida Kahlo film was that the more I looked and the more I understood about her biography, the more I really, really liked her work. And Frida Kahlo is arguably the most popular, she's certainly one of the most popular female artists in history. And yet, ironically, people would probably struggle to name a painting by her. If they did, if they were able to name a painting, it is probably this one. But I think you can't understand this painting without understanding the biography. So it's absolutely a painter. She's absolutely a painter that you have to understand who she was and what she went through and the world in which she lived, all the various contexts, to really understand and appreciate her artwork. Okay, so Laura, let me start with you.
I'm so excited that Ali's here today.
Hello, I'm excited to be here.
Excited that you're here, Ali, because I know Phil's going to start with me, but I feel like I've got the two experts here now. So I'm. I was just thinking I probably haven't going to have more questions today than answers. So it's going to be really lovely to get some real good details on what actually happened when you were there making the film and things like that. But anyway, go on then, Phil. If you were to start with me,
My question was,
yes,
did you know this painting?
I did know this painting. And I know we've touched on it before, but definitely I knew the painting and I knew Frida Kahlo. But possibly because of seeing it in, you know, many shops, especially in Brighton, those kind of hippie sort of shops and all the little trinkets and cups and things like that. The way she's always portrayed on things, and she sort of just hit the big time. Probably because of that, but the painting itself, I only knew from, I just always seen it, but I didn't know anything about it at all. So this is what's so lovely about having you two today.
Okay, well, fire away. Ali's here. Ask a question.
Yeah, I'll see if I can answer.
Well, the funny thing was because of the painting, obviously, I'm assuming you obviously saw the painting whilst you were there filming.
Yes, we did. We filmed it in the Mexican Museum of Modern Art, and it had its own room. It was a whole room dedicated to this painting.
And honestly, I can't imagine, was it absolutely as beautiful as it looks, even just on the screen now?
Yeah, it is a very beautiful painting. It's interesting in that it's the largest painting that Frida Kahlo ever painted. Traditionally, she painted really tiny works. That was from a practical point of view in some respects, because one part of the Frida Kahlo story that everybody tends to know is that she was really badly injured in an accident as a teenager and spent the rest of her life coping with various disabilities, mostly caused by that accident. So whereas some artists were much more mobile and could sort of create or go up scaffolding to do big paintings, that kind of thing, she, most of the photographs that we saw of her working, she would be sat down with teeny tiny brushes very close to these small canvases. They weren't actually canvases, most of them. I'll come back to that later. She used to paint on tin, from tequila tins. That was something that was quite a traditional way of painting in Mexico. But we'll come back to that later on. So, yes, so this was her largest painting, and quite unusual in that sense. And there was supposedly, there's a rumour as to why this was the largest painting she ever produced. It was shown in an exhibition of surrealism in Mexico after her divorce from Diego Rivera. And supposedly she painted this, obviously we'll get onto the subject, but she painted this in large because she knew that he was going to be exhibiting some of his works there. And she wanted to outdo him. She wanted for this work to be the one that everybody noticed, because this would be the first time that her work was exhibited after her divorce. So, yes, that's
brilliant.
Okay. That's why when we walked into the room, it sort of took my breath away, because I wasn't used to Kahlo painting being so huge.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Mm. And do you think it did make an impact then against his work?
Yes, I imagine it did. Well, the thing is with Diego Rivera, he was a muralist, so all of his work was enormous. And
yes,
you know, we were so lucky to go and film some of Diego's work or Rivera's work. And that completely takes your breath away. Trying to remember the building we were in, Phil. What was it? It was the big government buildings, wasn't it? And it was the History of Mexico.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah. So
can I
compared
ask,
to that, yeah.
Can I ask, Ali, could you describe the painting? So,
yeah.
I mean, it's quite, as I said, if you don't understand what's going on when you first look at it, it's quite hard work in some ways. So you have to stop and look. And then when you look, you start, there's obviously a very clear narrative here.
Yeah, exactly that. And that is Frida Kahlo as an artist. She put her heart and soul and emotion and mental turmoil on pretty much every canvas. So they're very personal pieces, and probably none more than this one. So we've got two Frida Kahlos sitting next to each other on a bench. Both of them are in long dresses, but very different outfits. One is in the traditional Mexican Tijuana style outfit on the right-hand side. And on the left-hand side, she's in what looks like it's quite a European, sort of almost Victorian style dress, white dress. And it's apparently very similar to the wedding dress that her mother wore. So the thing you first notice about them is that each Frida has her heart, the sort of anatomical heart on the outside of the dress. And the Frida who is where is the Mexican Frida, who's wearing that Tijuana dress, has a complete heart. Whereas the one on the left-hand side, who's wearing a more European outfit, has a broken heart. And it's a heart that's revealed to be open. So what we're looking at is the Frida on the right, the Mexican Frida, she's holding a little, like a little cameo in her hand with a picture of Diego, her lifelong love, in her hand. And from that, a vein winds around her arm, goes through her heart, which is still whole. That vein then carries on and goes through to the next Frida, and that goes into the broken heart. And the vein that comes out of that is spurting blood out over the dress. So this is very Frida, having quite macabre sort of aspects to her work. So the way we can read this, obviously, is that after the divorce, he's broken her, completely broken her heart. He broke her heart again and again and again. And this, she is saying, you know, the Frida who is the Diego's Frida, she wore those Tijuana outfits when she met her. She started dressing like that after she met Diego. And with Diego, she is whole. And on the left-hand side, without him, she has left that whole kind of Mexican ideal, and she's there with a broken heart. And, yeah, she's dying, effectively. I mean, if you think of that, you know, her heart is broken, the blood is pouring out. She's going to die without him. So she did wear her heart on her sleeve very much as a person. But here she's wearing it very much on the outside of her clothing.
So the iconography, the symbolism of it, could not be more obvious when you explain it. Mm. If you didn't know that, is it a good piece of art?
I remember us having this debate at the very beginning when we started. Now, there's the painting that you and I discussed originally, Phil, when I came to you, it was Frida and Diego. It was the first painting that she painted after her marriage. And up until that point, if you look at Carlo's art, she's learning from European paintings. She's emulating that. They're quite, sort of traditional European style portraits. And then the whole thing of when she meets Diego Rivera, it's a point at which obviously she's no longer able to pursue her career as being a doctor. She's decided she wants to be an artist. She can't go to college anymore because of her disability and her injury. So she joins the Communist Party. She meets Diego Rivera, and suddenly she gets very involved in the political side of what's going on in Mexico. So all of her attention, along with Diego, is that she's turning back to traditional Mexican style of art. They're getting rid of that European influence. And the first painting we looked at that she did of herself and Diego looks very naive. And I think perhaps we discussed that maybe it's something a child could do. And we was like, yeah, is this good art? That was your question to me. And I was thinking, oh my goodness, I can't hear this. I've got my work cut out for this 90-minute film. But that naivety in her work, which we might even see here, is intentional, 100% intentional, because what she's doing and what Rivera and other artists were doing is that they were claiming back Mexicanidad, as people called it. They were claiming, and this is what she does in her dress. This is why she changes her dress sense from being quite a snazzy pencil skirted type of, you know, teenager at the first pictures we see of her. That's why she's embracing Mexico. They want to get rid of the Spanish influence, European influence, and embrace everything that is good about Mexico. And that included the sort of the traditional Mexico of the people, of the workers, which was dressing like this and was art in a very, in a folk-like naive fashion. And that's where she started. And that's why when you look at this and you might think, you know, there is maybe something quite, I don't know. I mean, you would, obviously this is developed from that Frida and Diego picture of early on, but yeah, it's not the kind of art that we're seeing maybe, you know, the impressionists doing or that kind of stuff. And you might think, yeah, maybe it is quite basic, but once you get to know her story, you realize how clever she is as an artist, and that the ability, she painted with teeny tiny paintbrushes and, you know, just told these incredible narratives, and that she is incredibly skilled. So she's using that skill to create something like this.
I think there is quite a big but there, in the sense that actually when you look at this painting, for example, and this is one of the things that, you know, a camera can do well in, look at details and, you know, on a big screen show you tiniest little details. Actually, the quality of, for example, I remember on the big screen, look, when we were showing you, you had shown details of the skirt, the dress on the left, as we're looking at it, where the blood stains are basically kind of transmorphing into kind of the petals, of, but they are beautifully defined. And what I actually grew to really like about Frida Kahlo is that, yes, on the, you know, in making a film about Edward Hopper, you learn, you know, which I've done, you learn that he would spend days and days, sometimes weeks, trying, waiting for the right clouds to sketch, and then going back to the studio and agonizing over them and then painting these clouds. Frida Kahlo's saying to us, it doesn't matter. That's not the point. The point of my painting is not to prove to you that I can paint clouds. The point of my painting is to convey my pain, my story to you in a way that is both telling you something about myself, but also is communicating. Because I think she did think about her audience. Sometimes maybe her audience is just Diego, but I think sometimes she's thinking to herself, I'm not the only woman to be suffering this. Has to be said, I think a bit of Frida Kahlo's personality is quite self-centered. So the extent to which she thought about her audience is
I agree.
An interesting question. But I think she's saying, I can be a great painter in the details that I need to be, and in the details that are unimportant, in this case, the floor, the background, the clouds. I'm not going to waste my time on it. So actually, yes, go ahead.
I was just going to say, actually, so the clouds behind, so she was a huge fan of El Greco. And you look, there's an El Greco painting called View of Toledo.
Yeah.
And which is very, you know, it's the beautiful town of Toledo with a very stormy background. So actually, these clouds are very purposeful. And that if you compare the two paintings, the background is almost exactly the same. She's almost lifted El Greco's clouds. And again, I suppose that's representing her psychological state of just this, ominous.
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, there is... Yeah. Sorry, Laura. Yeah, go ahead, Laura.
No, I was just going to ask just quickly, because what I always find amazing about her is that you're always saying about the amount of passion, the pain she was in, everything, but she never, ever puts it in her face. On all the paintings, I don't think I really feel that it's ever in her face.
That's really interesting. That's a very good point. And that is something a lot of people comment on. There's one painting which I would say is my favourite Kahlo painting. Uh-huh. And almost is the reason, it's so powerful, almost for that reason. It's called The Broken Column. And this was painted after this. And that really took my breath away again when I saw that in, I think it was the Musée Olmedo in Mexico City. And that's a painting of her, her face and her upper torso, her body cracked open, and you can see where her spine is. It's as a column, and it's completely shattered and broken. And she's showing her pain. And one of the interviewees said, it's incredible. Not many people can paint pain. How do you paint? How do you communicate pain in an image? And that image is the only painting by any artist I've ever come across that comes is pain writ large on a canvas. But her face, she has tears coming down her face in that. But you're right, she still has that almost challenging gaze. As a viewer of that painting, you have to look at her eyes. And the face is exactly as you say, almost expressionless, but that makes it even more challenging. It's almost like I'm bearing this pain. I've got no choice, but it's just the tears that are coming down. So, you're right.
Again, that was something that I learned from Ali's film. Is when you look into Frida's biography, her father was a German emigre to Mexico. And one of the questions that I put to Ali actually was, why Mexico? You know, we just think of Frida Kahlo. In fact, Frida Kahlo was a Mexican artist. and one that was because of a very, very severe accident, had severe physical issues for most of her life, certainly most of her adult, all of her adult life, really. But in terms of, why Mexico City? And actually, it's really interesting looking at what a draw Mexico City was at this time. But then you have to ask yourself, so how did she become an artist? It's a familiar tale with artists, the Monets and the Pissarros and the Hoppers. They go to art school. They have teachers. They have people that are, teaching them life drawings. She didn't have any of that. She kind of essentially self-taught. And her first painting that we show in the film, or the first serious painting, is really, it's really good.
It's quite interesting what you're saying about the fact that her dad was German. So,
oh, I know.
He was a German. No, you go ahead, and then I'll tell you what I know.
I was going to say. So her father comes, and he's a photographer. So one of the things, and it seems that Frida was a little bit of his favorite, perhaps because he felt sorry for her because she had polio as a child.
Yeah.
Anyway, she sat for him, and this was her pose. This kind of three-quarter. And in those days of photography, it's not about action shots so much. It's you sit and you don't move. We've probably come a little way from the days where your head was physically in a brace so it wouldn't move. But nevertheless, you they're kind of passionless to some extent. And this idea with Frida, unlike, say, a Rembrandt or a Van Gogh, where the emotion is in the face, with Frida, it's always, apart from maybe the one example that Ali just gave, it's below the neck. Her narrative is below the neck, which makes her so interesting and so unusual. And, of course, it becomes a bit of a calling card too, doesn't it, Ali? I think there's a point at which she realises that actually her features are commercial.
Yeah. And it's almost after this painting. And that's sort of slightly connected with the fact that there's some quote that after the divorce, she decides that never again will I rely on a man for money. And she realizes that, exactly as you say, that her image will sell. She started to get notoriety because Diego Rivera was incredibly famous and she was his wife. And so people started to know them as a couple. People started to notice the way she dressed. She started to get almost icon status in her own lifetime, not necessarily as an artist. Then after this painting, she's on her own. She needs money. She's to paint what we call the three-quarter sort of bust portraits. And she's sort of a three-quarter turn on. Those almost looking to the camera as if it were. They do look like sort of photographs in her pose. They then become the paintings that most of us associate with Frida Kahlo. They're the ones that appear on the notebooks and the tote bags and the cushions and the those are the ones everybody knows. And she goes through a few years of just creating these incredible portraits. And as you say, Phil, it's the face is always the same. It's the detail around. So she sometimes there are often sort of animals around her or there's ribbons, there's the butterflies, the things to do, symbol. Yeah, she uses a lot of symbolism. And that's when she starts selling her work. People are wanting a piece of her, and that's how she can do it and make money.
I read somewhere, sorry, Phil.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I read somewhere with the painting that she was actually very, very lonely. And so the reason that she painted two was that she felt the only person that could really support herself was herself. And that was why they were holding hands in the painting. Did you think, is that correct, Ali?
Frida Kahlo was self. I think there was, she demanded attention. When you read the letters that she wrote to her friends and to Rivera, she is, everything is about her. And there was one of our interviewees even suggested that, because Frida Kahlo had so many operations, was constantly going for operations. And obviously she was very injured, but she realised every time she had that would bring Diego back to her. And it got into a bit of a cycle. And one of the interviews said maybe she had a little bit of Munchausen, you know, that she sort of spiralled into this sort of self-obsessive kind of, you know, love, I suppose. But, you know, who are we to judge if you've been through that kind of accident and disbelief? You know, so pretty much all of her paintings are of herself.
Yes. So, I think you do get that, though, if you are that ill. Yeah. You do get to the stage of literally everything about would be the doubt, getting out of bed even.
Yeah, you think you wake up and think, what's hurting now? So exactly. Of course you would.
And I mean, she had a leg amputated, didn't she, right near the end?
She did. So yeah, she did.
I've been to one of those exhibitions of all her costumes and things like that and her outfits, which was amazing. So
I'm devastated that I missed that, but I did end up seeing all of all of the stuff that was in that exhibition when we went and filmed in her house in Mexico. It's all back there. So
yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah, so I
think
know.
That exhibition really opened. That was at the V&A, wasn't it? And I think that really opened, freed it up to a UK audience once again. And I think that sort of reignited our interest in her.
Definitely. It is fantastic that in Mexico City you can go to the, you know, the famous Blue House, and it is wonderful to walk around there. And they've been very careful to preserve it and offer it to visitors in such a way that you do get a sense of, as much as one can, of her life there. So the bookcases, and the wheelchair, and the easel, and the bed, and the this, that, and the other. I mean,
because of course that was the house that she grew up in as a child, and then when she divorced Diego, then she moved back into that house that became her house, and Diego and Frida remarried after about a year after that divorce, after she painted this painting.
And what a love affair. It's mad.
I know. It was tumultuous, to say the least.
Yeah.
But then because as she got older and her mobility got less and less, that house became her world, a sort of microcosm of, and so that, you know, she'd have all of her friends there, and she'd have all her animals. She had monkeys and parrots and dogs and little deer wandering around. And she created her world as her world outside got smaller. She created that world in that house. So when you can go and visit, it's wonderful. You do get a sense of her. And even the bed that, so famously how she got to become an artist is when she was in bed from this accident and couldn't move as a child. Her parents bought her canvas and paints. And I think it was her mum stuck a mirror in the canopy above her bed. So there's a four-poster bed there, and they put a mirror at the top. So obviously you're lying in bed. All she could really look up and see was her own image. And that's where it started. Mm. She, you know, she was able to do self-portraits by just looking up at the mirror when she was lying in bed. And there's some really lovely black and white photographs of her as an older woman, in a full body, another operation in hospital, with a canvas. And so that's something she carried on doing.
Yeah.
I just lost that word there. In a full body, what, Ellie?
Cast. So she, you know, like a plaster cast.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
She had another operation on her back. And there's she actually, one of her plaster casts, she then drew on it. So, you know, like kids do today when they break their arm. Yeah, hers. There's a great picture of her.
I'd love to make a film. I'd like to make a film one day just about history of self-portraits.
Yes, I think, it's absolutely fascinating. And one of the interviewees likened her as in the greatest self-portraitist were Frida Kahlo, Rembrandt and Van Gogh.
Of course, we just met and you interviewed an expert on the history of mirrors, which might not on first hearing sound that interesting, but actually, if you think about how we define ourselves by seeing ourselves in mirrors, and, you know, you can imagine for thousands of years, most people, the majority of people, had no image of themselves.
Didn't know what they looked like.
But didn't even think about it. It didn't matter. They didn't think, what do I look like? What's my body shape, et cetera, et cetera. And
I think that sounds amazing.
So maybe if there was absolute kind of crystal clear, calm water, you know, you might have just seen a reflection of your face, perhaps.
I mean, if you were royalty, for example, people would come and you know, do portraits of you. But it was completely exclusive to those, you know, the top echelons of society. But you're right. I think it'd be a really good program to do that, because you now look at where we're at with the selfie. Good God, you know.
I mean, today, more selfies will be taken on this one day today than all the self-portraits have ever been painted. Isn't that extraordinary? Anyway, Frida Kahlo, I mean, I'd go back. I mean, Ali and I had a great time in Mexico City. Mm. I'd go back tomorrow.
So would I.
Very happy to.
And I totally want to come.
Yeah, we'll take you. We'll have to do a podcast from there.
I mean, naturally, I can't recommend Ali's film enough. It's
brilliant. I've seen it as well. It's amazing.
It's worth watching again and again, particularly in the cinema, but at home is just as good. So, Ali, thank you so much. I know you're busy on something else. So thank you, Laura, as ever.
And, thank you.
thank you both. Thank you both for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh, it's so good.
All right. See you next week. Bye.
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 Thank you for listening to the Painting of the Week podcast. For more information, please visit our website at seventh-art.com or contact us by emailing info@seventh-art.com. See you next time.